Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arknish, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our great pleasure to once again this week bring you Pro Football Weekly, where every week we try and bring you all the news, notes, and analysis, scoops, and rumors before they even happen.
We'll catch up on all the latest doings in the NFL and free agency, plus a look at the NFL draft, including a couple of big pro days.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us again for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor at PFW. Our regular host, Wayne Larrabee, out in the middle of March Madness. Wayne is calling basketball games in the tournament for Dial Global and their national radio broadcast, but Wayne will be back with us as we really dive into our pre-draft coverage starting next week on the show. We've got Eric Edholm, senior editor for Pro Football Weekly, sitting in for Wayne, co-hosting with me here in the studio. And joining us today on the PFW hotline from the editorial offices are associate editors Kevin Fishbane and Arthur Arkish. And we're going to take you around the NFL and talk about just the updates in the last week, some plans that seem to finally be coming clear with certain teams, some teams whose plans seem even murkier and more muddled to us as we try and figure out what they're doing, and a couple more big releases and signings. We'll also take an early look at the quarterback position in the NFL college draft, along with the updates on some of the pro days that went on around the country this week. But first off, Eric, I want to start with the Baltimore Ravens, because with all the gloom and doom, and there should be, because I don't see the Ravens as a Super Bowl contender with all the losses that they've had. But now they get Elvis Dumervil. You got to remember, Helo Denard is still there. Terrell Suggs is still there. They plug in Michael Huff at safety, was a pretty good football player, is still a pretty good journeyman.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, there's nothing there. The problem is they got to replace the rest of the secondary. They're obviously thin at linebacker. Again, I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. But knowing how Ozzie Newsome drafts, we're beginning to see now what he was thinking as he let all those people get away.
Yeah, they made a lot of tough financial decisions, but it was based on not overpaying for guys like Ed Reed and Anquan Boldin. Now, Boldin is the one that I could really argue with because he was so clutch and so important to Flacco's development. They really don't have a guy on that to replace him. They were able to find Huff for cheap. He's obviously a younger version of Reed. Do I think Ed Reed's going to play three more great years? No, I do not. He may be a great boost this year for Houston, but beyond that, I don't know. And like you said, the way they draft, the way they discover gems, diamonds in the rough, undrafted free agents, the way they sign bargain free agents like Chris Canty and Marcus Spears, I'm not too worried. They're going to be competitive in some form.
Kevin, one of the best things about these offseason shows, we still try and present more news and facts than anybody else, but we get to offer some opinions too. Joe Flacco is what it was all about. They felt they had to make him at least temporarily the highest paid player in the league. Was it the right move?
You know, the way he played in the postseason and the idea that this is a quarterback-driven league, I think they had to do it. You know, I think Ozzie Newsome, they obviously knew that by doing that, they would have to make some sacrifices. And as we've talked about, the Ravens seem prepared. You look at the Courtney Upshaw draft pick last year as some kind of insurance. You know, the funny thing about the Flacco deal is now reports are coming out that Aaron Rodgers' people and the Packers are starting to talk. Matt Ryan is next in line. So it's going to be interesting to see how long Flacco actually is the highest-paid player in the league. It might not last more than a couple weeks.
You know, clearly, guys, Ray Lewis was going to go. You know, we knew that. Matt Burke was going to go. But making or allowing Ed Reed to be a Houston Texan and a highly paid Houston Texan, that was the shocking move. And it obviously had to do with the money that was given to Flacco. And it's obvious to me that Ozzie Newsome made a decision, like all the other highly competitive teams on a full-time basis, we need to be offensive first and not defensive first anymore. Chicago Bears did the exact same thing. Now, they have not given big money to Jay Cutler, nor I don't think they will this offseason. They'd be crazy if they did. But they spent hugely on a left tackle in Jermon Bushrod and a tight end in Martellus Bennett, and they let Brian Urlacher, the face of the franchise, get away. They let starting linebacker Nick Roach get away. It looks like they're going to let defensive end Izzy Adonijay get away. But, Arthur, now they've added a couple pieces. They signed the mercurial, and that may be too high a compliment for DJ Williams. He's a very good football player when he's right. I don't know if he's a great football player, but he hasn't been right the last couple years. They plug in James Anderson, kind of a journeyman out of Carolina. They re-sign Kelvin Hayden. So it seems clear to me that Bears and Ravens are on the same track. They're saying whether we like it or not, we got to focus on our offenses and we're going to plug in parts on defense.
Yeah, and it'll be fascinating to see if it works out or not. You know, you see Phil Emery obviously putting all the eggs in the Jay Cutler basket. We don't know what they're going to do beyond this season, but it is interesting to see them kind of fortify the offense and at least make it a make or break year for Cutler heading into the contract year where there's really no excuses left. on defense, you know, we'll wait and see if these linebackers are going to compete for jobs. It looks like right now they have to at least be penciled in. But like you've been talking about with Baltimore, the vision starts to become a little bit clearer. Perhaps they had these guys in mind when they let a Brian Urlacher and Nick Roach go.
You know, Eric, what is a little intriguing about the Bears is I think we're starting to get an idea of who Phil Emery is, and I think we're finding out he's not at all the guy that people expect him to be, Mr. Buttoned-up, straight-laced Sunday school teacher. He took a huge chance on Brandon Marshall based on all the baggage, and it could not have worked out more spectacularly. At the same time, when they took Evan Rodriguez in the fourth round last year, a lot of people said, well, maybe as an athlete, but look at all the off-season, or not off-season, off-the-field problems. He gets arrested last week down in Miami for resisting arrest. Now he gets rid of the face of the franchise in Brian Urlacher, and this is going to have reverberations. If Urlacher, I don't know that it was the wrong football move. Right. I don't know if Brian's going to pass a physical somewhere, but still, he brings in DJ Williams, who was suspended more than he was eligible last year. And when you look at what he was suspended for, the guy didn't even know how to cheat on trying to cheat on a test. I mean, you know, it really is kind of goofy.
And DJ Williams, a only slightly younger, you know, slightly less injury-prone version of Urlacher. So it's not like you went with a 26-year-old middle linebacker who's got 5 or 6 years left in his prime. He went with a guy who was about the same age as Brian. So, you know, some controversial decisions, and I think maybe the right ones, but you're right. I think the character questions that they've been able to, you know, take on some of these guys, not quite the Cincinnati Bengals or Oakland Raiders in that regard, but making more risks. They kind of went safe pick, risky pick last year. It's going to be fun to see how it all turns out.
Well, and you talk about a different kind of character question, no trouble off the field, but what they've said is we're going to make Jay Cutler the face of this team with the coach hiring.
Yeah.
Mark Trestman was hired because they believe he's the guy who can turn Jay Cutler into what everybody thought he could be. And again, it's quite a gamble on the part of Phil Emery. We will see where the Chicago Bears are headed. We've got to take a very quick commercial break. Are the Falcons as good or better as last year? How about the Giants? We'll talk about those teams next. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm in studio. We are joined by Pro Football Weekly Associate Editors Kevin Fishbane and Arthur Arkish. And the Atlanta Falcons, guys, were the number one seed in the NFC. They had some salary cap issues. I wouldn't say they were big problems, but they needed to kind of straighten some things out. And it looked like Michael Turner didn't have much left in the tank. It looked like John Abraham didn't have much left in the tank. So they let two really good football players get away, a couple other salary cap moves. But then they turned around. They re-signed their left tackle in Sam Baker. They get Tony Gonzalez to come back, which a lot of people didn't think was going to happen and is a big get for them. And then they add Steven Jackson, who is just I don't even know if he is younger, but he's a healthier, more durable version of Michael Turner. And so, Arthur, I'll start with you first this time. And, of course, the signing of OCU Manure to replace John Abraham. It's almost like they said, we know what we want. We just want a little safer version of the same guy. And I would argue they may be a better team now than they were at the end of the season.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I look at what Steven Jackson was doing down the stretch last year. It seems like he got pushed a little bit after the kid started to get his takes, and then it just Jackson kind of took off, showed he still had plenty left, and did get that deal. I think it's a definite upgrade over Turner at this point. We'll see if it's the same thing with Umeniori. Obviously, he's had some of the same injury concerns that John Abraham, who left, did, and we'll have to wait and see if they can get the same type of presence off the edge there. But you really just can't say enough about getting Tony Gonzalez back, the kind of guy who puts those sort of numbers up in his mid-30s and clearly isn't in decline yet. You had to wonder. I know the percentages had changed throughout the offseason of the chance of him retiring, but they certainly did get a huge get with him returning.
You know, and Kevin, there's one other thing about this team to me. I did their game from the sidelines for Dial Global against the Lions late in the season. Julio Jones may very well be the next Calvin Johnson. This kid's only going to get better. Roddy White, this is hard to say about a Pro Bowler, is one of the most underrated receivers in the league. And you got Jacquizz Rodgers, who's continuing to get better and is a great change of pace, you know, to have with those receivers and with Steven Jackson. And then, of course, Matt Ryan, who took a big step forward this year. The question, I think, is about the defense. Is just trading out a John Abraham for a OCU Manure going to be enough?
Yeah, we're going to have to see, because pass rush has been their issue for a couple of years, and it still was even with Abram last year. And my bigger defensive question for them is the cornerback position. I think it was great that they re-signed William Moore for the secondary, but it doesn't look like they're going to re-sign Brent Grimes, which maybe makes sense. You know, he suffered the injury last year in his franchise year. You know, they released Dante Robinson, who's now with the Chiefs. Who do they have there to start at corner in a position that's so important now in the NFL for a team that we've seen now 2 years in a row row in the playoffs really get torched at, late in games by opposing quarterbacks? That's the position that's kind of a big question mark for them. I think their front seven's much better. They have very good linebackers, but I'm kind of curious about that secondary.
Well, yeah, Kevin, you make a great point, because then you add Asante Samuel, who they obviously believe has plenty left in the tank, but he's a ball-hawking corner with limited run skills. And
he's 32.
Yeah, and this is a team, Eric, that people have run the football on. Now, I think they're okay with Samuel, but as Kevin points out, they were okay when they had when they hoped to have Robinson and Grimes and had at least Robinson. Now, I wonder about OCU Manure. You, of course, have covered the Giants for us for a long time. I think it was a foregone conclusion he wasn't going to be a Giant because there's questions about how much he has left in the tank. But it was also a foregone conclusion the Giants were going to make big changes on the offensive line. They've now re-signed that entire offensive line. So first, what do you think Umanyora has left, and are you surprised that the Giants kept that line intact?
My guess is that OC, once they see what they have in a 31-year-old pass rusher with an injury history, is probably going to be a 45 to 55 play game kind of guy. I don't think you want him out there, you know, trying to stop the run. Look at the Giants against the run last season, pretty awful. Croy Bierman's your other end. That kind of scares me a little bit in terms of teams trying to run the ball, especially in the perimeter. So, you know, I'd like to see that front four get better. As far as the Giants are concerned, I still think they're going to target an offensive line with that first pick. They picked 19th. They might be able to get a big, massive right tackle like DJ Fluker. They might get lucky and get one of those interior guys to float down. I don't like David Deal, and I don't think he's a starting tackle. I think he's a perfect swing guy. He can play four offensive line positions. So, to me, I still think they've got work to do on that offensive line. It probably starts with that first-round draft pick.
You know, Kevin, we talked about the radical changes the Ravens and the Bears made with veteran players. The Giants didn't just cut loose Osa Umanyora. Michael Boley's gone. Kenny Phillips is in Philadelphia. Ahmad Bradshaw. I believe that Bradshaw and Boley are still on the street. If not, they didn't sign very high-profile deals. Are the Giants still a contender?
You know, they still have the X factor named Eli Manning, which certainly factors in. And I think everyone's curious to see what Jason Pierre-Paul looks like. I know he was my preseason defensive MVP last year and didn't necessarily play like that. But if their secondary gets healthier, you know, they still have, you know, one of the better defensive lines in the league. And as Eric mentioned, if they could shore up that offensive line, you look, David Wilson showed plenty of flashes last year. You look at, you know, once they get the Victor Cruz thing settled, they have some nice young receivers to work with as well. So, you know, I think they'll certainly be there. But that NFC East is such an interesting division because there's so many question marks about all four teams coming in. And the nice thing for the Giants is that they do have Eli, so they don't have to worry about that position, which always is going to make them a factor.
All right, Arthur, Kevin got the opinion piece last segment. I'll let you have it this segment because I know you covered Peyton very closely for years in Indy. Eli Manning, better than we think, not as much as we make him out to be, or exactly who we think he is?
I think he's probably who we make him out to be, and that's a guy who's not going to ever be the most consistent person, but when, you know, the lights are the brightest, he's always found a way to turn it on. I think Kevin hit on some valuable things here. They're loaded on offense still. Maybe the line needs a little bit of work, but even after saying goodbye to Ahmad Bradshaw, David Wilson is an explosive player. They really like Andre Brown behind him, and it's easy to forget Reuben Randall, you know, only had chances to make sort of sparing contributions last year, but he's a kid they're really excited about. So I think Eli is certainly still in the upper echelon of quarterback. Call it whatever you want to. He certainly plays on the biggest stages, and he's got a lot of help with the guys around him.
Very interesting, and I agree. They're loaded on offense, but don't forget, you know, you got Victor Cruz, who could get a tender sheet from somewhere, and they were rumored to be looking at Emmanuel Sanders, so they'd still like to do more. We've got to take a quick commercial break. We've got more Pro Football Weekly in a moment. Welcome back, everybody. More NFL talk right here on Pro Football Weekly as we keep you up to date on everything happening during the offseason in the National Football League. Free agency has started to slow down. I wouldn't say wind down. There's still going to be some significant signings. We don't know where Dwight Freeney is going to end up. I don't think John Abraham has a home yet. These guys are all going to land somewhere. We'll keep you up to date on that week in and week out right here on Pro Football Weekly at your local station. Same time, same spot on the radio dial. Right now, I want to talk a little bit about the AFC North and the Cincinnati Bengals in particular. And Eric, I start with you because I am forever puzzled about this football team. I don't think they're a real good football team. They're obviously a very competitive football team. Back-to-back trips to the playoffs, back-to-back opening round losses. It's all built around A.J. Green, who I think is a potential Hall of Famer, and Andy Dalton, who I still can't make up my mind. He's a good quarterback, obviously. And yet they've got a situation in the AFC North where everybody thinks that the Steelers and the Ravens are headed in the wrong direction, that the Bengals are the heir apparent. And they've done basically nothing during the offseason.
Yeah, with all that cap room, I'd argue that the team is built around Mike Brown and the way he approaches building the team. So, you know, it's been fascinating. I mean, Dalton, I thought played maybe worse in his second year than he did as a rookie. You know, I mean, obviously with Green out there, you've got an incredible playmaker who might be the, you know, second best receiver in the NFL. You've got Mohamed Sanu, who I think is up and coming. You know, defensively, they were able to keep that front seven intact, which I think is terrific. You know, Vontaze Burfict's probably going to be a better playmaker. Michael Johnson could be a special player. You know, the secondary, I think, needs help, and there's still spots on that offensive line that can improve. So you start looking at these things, and they haven't re-signed Andre Smith yet. I would think they will, but I don't think they've decided that's absolutely going to happen yet. And if they don't get their price, they'll move on. So, you know, a team, like you said, that's right on the verge and you think will be eager to make one or two key moves and just get over that hump hasn't done it yet.
You know, Kevin, the real puzzle is why Andre Smith isn't re-signed, because here's a team that had $50 million under the cap. They've hung a franchise tag on Michael Johnson that cost them $11.2 million this year against the cap. And yet you would think they'd get a long-term deal done with Michael Johnson. They've got the room. I mean, I don't know if Mike Brown just refuses to give guaranteed money to anybody. But other than that, you know, they've done low-dollar deals with Ray Maaluga. They got Pac-Man Jones back. They got Brandon Tate. But these guys aren't difference makers. Andre Smith is in many respects the key to that running game. And they made a nice move in Benjarvis Green-Ellis. He was an upgrade over Cedric Benson until about week 13 or week 14, just like in New England. Then suddenly his production started to slip a little bit. So you just wonder, where does this team see themselves getting better?
Yeah, you know, I think Andre Smith is a really interesting one because, you know, people still remember him from his goofy combine, you know, 4 years ago. But the guy had a great year last year when you look at all the metrics of the way he played. But the tackle market's been so strange this year. You look at the type of money on, you have the Gazzard Chairless on the one end of the spectrum. You look at Jake Long, what he got. It's been, and this is a draft that is very tackle heavy. So you have to wonder what the Bengals are thinking with him. And Eric mentioned how much cap room that they have and what they're looking at. I still think that they could use another playmaker on offense for Andy Dalton, because I'm far from sold on the way he has played. You know, I like Green Ellis, and I think if they can keep Bernard Scott, Cedric Pierman showed some nice things last year too. The young kid Kevin Zeiler on the offensive line was a nice improvement, but this is a team that surprised me to make the playoffs last year, but when you look at their roster now, I know the Ravens and Steelers might be taking a step back, but it does not look like a playoff team for 2013.
Arthur, we've talked a little bit about the Ravens, that we get their plan now. I still have to think they're taking at least a little bit of a step back, if not a big one, although Ozzie Newsome drafts better than anybody. You can't count on rookies. You look at the Steelers, though, and I'm not sure that's as bad as people think it is. Granted, they were a 500 football team last year. They've lost James Harrison and Mike Wallace because they wanted to. I mean, it's not as if these are devastating blows to them that they hadn't planned for. They haven't really added anybody. I think it's fascinating that one of the first guys they re-signed was Plaxico Burress. I don't know what that tells you, but they obviously want him back in camp this year. And I wonder, are the Steelers taking a step back, or is this a team that, because of injuries and maybe some bad actors who are gone, Rashard Mendenhall in particular, is ready to come right back and contend this year?
I just wonder who are the guys waiting in the wings. That's what makes me kind of think perhaps they're taking a little bit of a step back. Of course, they still do have Ben Roethlisberger. We know that's the most important position on the field. But who's replacing Mike Wallace? Who's replacing James Harrison? You see these guys keep getting older. What are they doing in the backfield? I mean, you'd have to assume they're going to be a leading candidate to get a running back early with, of course, Mendenhall moving on and all these other guys who haven't proven to be difference makers and, Redmond and Dwyer. So, you know, I have to give Kevin Colbert the benefit of the doubt. Of course, he's been doing this so well for so long, but I just see a team that seems to be getting older, and I just wonder if the jars on the shelf are ready to sort of come up and produce when they need them to.
And one big note, Heath Miller tore his MCL, PCL, ACL back in December. That's a big loss if he's not back on the field. He's one of their key blockers and receivers.
Well, and they re-signed Matt Spaeth,
right,
who left for a couple
yep.
years ago to the Bears, and one thing Spaeth proved in Chicago, he can't catch the football. He's a pretty good blocker.
Catch a cold. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, he is not going to be your leading receiver. Guys, we know somebody's going from worst to first, and for the first time, I'm going to make my pick in March.
Wow.
I'm not even going to wait.
Don't go there, really?
The best young talent in the AFC North is clearly in Cleveland.
Okay.
They're a quarterback away, you know, and I'm not saying they're going to be a great team, but I firmly believe they've got the best young talent in the division, and if they get somebody who's serviceable at quarterback, I think that could be the team that makes the move. I'll give you guys a chance to counter in a moment. I got to take a quick commercial break. We'll get your thoughts on that, as well as talk a little bit about the AFC West in just a moment.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
We are. We're having fun talking some NFL football during the offseason. We've got that window, that little bit of a void where free agency has been hot news but has slowed down a little bit. The draft is still about 4 weeks off, but there's plenty to talk about in the National Football League. And I just gave the Cleveland Browns the 2013 AFC North title. And Eric, I suspect you're ready to take it away.
I thought you were going to say the curse, you know.
Probably that too, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, you know, I think their defensive line and really their front seven talent is outstanding. I didn't love the Paul Kruger signing, thought it was too expensive, but Desmond Bryant is an outstanding pickup. I think you can still play with Taylor and Reuben up front, and, you know, the guys like DeQuell Jackson been racking up the tackles. That's great. Josh Gordon seemed to play great last year. Maybe Greg Little comes around. They don't have a quarterback to me yet. I don't think Jason Campbell's going to be good enough to take him over the hump. You know, I'm still worried about Trent Richardson being a playmaker and being healthy. Don't really have a tight end I love. They just signed Kellen Davis. I don't love that pick. Still think there are parts of that offensive line that could get better, and that secondary still, I think, needs a little bit of work. You know, Joe Hayden's great and TJ Ward's great, but again, they're close. They're really close. I'm just surprised they haven't, to this point, at least targeted a better quarterback than Brandon Whedon. I know Campbell's in the picture, but still think you got to do a little better than that.
All right, guys, let's move on to the West. And Kevin, of course, you've covered the West for us recently. And, you know, with the Denver Broncos, it looked like under the magical duo of John Elway and Peyton Manning, nothing could go wrong. And then the Elvis Dumervil fiasco. Now, as near as we can tell, the agent's going to be the fall guy here. You know, and yet there was some hope and belief that they'd still get a deal done with Dumervil. And at the end of the day, he signed a similar contract in Baltimore, granted a little more front-end money, but not that much. And that tells you that there was some bad feeling in the end.
Yeah, there was, and it turned into kind of a PR war between the two sides as well, you know, with Elway releasing two long statements about the whole situation, so everybody knew what Denver's side was, and Elway, as well as Dumervil's former agent now, were both very, you know, open to talking to the media about the whole situation. You look at it, though, and you wonder how much Denver really wanted Elvis Dumervil back. Yes, they would have liked to have him. They like him opposite Von Miller. It worked out well last year. You know, he made some big plays, but they weren't going to pay him what he wanted, and I don't know how much they loved the idea of paying him, you know, what they had offered as well, because, you know, there was that hour in which they could have really made a big effort to get him to pick up the phone or pick up the fax or what have you. So, you know, look, this is a team that's made a lot of big moves in free agency. Kind of surprised me how active they have been. They add a starting guard, they add a starting corner in Rogers Cromartie. You look at Terrence Knighton, obviously Wes Welker on offense. You know, they're still going to be right there, but that pass rusher outside Von Miller, that's a void now. They're going to have to go find a replacement for it.
All right, Arthur, I'm going to ask Kevin to comment on this as well because he's covered the Raiders for us, but I'm going to start with you first. Eric and I were talking about this a little bit off the air. The Oakland Raiders are going to cut Carson Palmer. He's not going to redo his deal. He's got a $13 million cap hit. He's not worth it at this stage of his career. But the only other quarterback on the roster right now is Terrell Pryor. And, that was not an accident. Well, because I really think it's kind of a joke that they think this guy's going to be a starting NFL quarterback. Great athlete. He may be an NFL player.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to believe, Arthur, and yet they haven't brought in another veteran quarterback yet.
Yeah, a little bit surprising, but then again, we see what's out there, and it's really not much. So, you know, I don't really think that there's any surprise that Palmer's got to go. I mean, Reggie McKenzie is cleaning house. He had a complete mess on his hands when he got in there, and he's, you know, taking the beginning strides to go about fixing that situation. But what do you do at quarterback? We talked a little bit about could they be the team that's crazy enough to go Geno Smith at the top of the first round. Boy, I hope not. I mean, I hope they're at least, you know, find a way to trade down and sort of match value with where they're selecting. But we know that between the free agency market and the draft class, there is not a lot of shoe-in guys that you can plug in and play at quarterback. So I think McKenzie's got a little bit of a situation on his hands, yeah.
Well, and Kevin, I come back to you because I think what we're, I don't know that we're overlooking it, but what we need to comment on here is there is not a GM or personnel guy in the league who knows Matt Flynn better than Reggie McKenzie.
Right.
And I almost wonder if a deal is not at least being heavily considered, if not possibly even in the works.
You know, that would make a whole lot of sense. And Reggie McKenzie, as you said, knows him very well. Although you look at the other side, Joe Philbin knew him pretty well last year, and that deal did not work out. And the Dolphins are pretty happy it didn't work out because they got Tannehill instead. But the Raiders are just an absolute disaster right now. And I think everyone can agree that Reggie McKenzie got served just a terrible situation to deal with. You look at the cuts that they had to make in Hayward Bay, Michael Huff, the guys they couldn't re-sign, and Philip Wheeler, Brandon Myers. The list, you know, they released Tommy Kelly. They're not going to re-sign Richard Seymour. I mean, their biggest signing was Nick Roach, who, you know, I'm a Nick Roach fan, but, you know, is that really your answer to try to get better? I mean, this team needs a quarterback. They need more at receiver. They need a complimentary running back to Darren McFadden, who's only going to give you 10 games a day. Their secondary, you know, who's their starting secondary right now? It was terrible last year. It doesn't look like it's going to be good this year. The Rolando McClain thing was a mess. I mean, this is one of those teams where they can't tell their fans they're going to compete in 2013. You know, in the NFL, these teams are trying to prove that they can compete 1 year at a time. The Raiders, you have to look ahead to 2014, 2015 before this team can get a quarterback, figure out their cap situation, and have enough money to spend to actually be competitive in a division that everybody else is getting better.
All right, and full disclosure, folks, Nick Roach, nice football player, fine young man, but I suspect the fact that Kevin and he were at Northwestern together has something to do with that fandom as well. We got to take one more commercial break, guys. We're back in just a moment. We roll on with Pro Football Weekly, and we're talking a little bit now about one of the biggest surprises in the National Football League in 2012. Will they be again in 13? Let me read you guys a list here and tell me what you think. You go out in free agency. You sign defensive tackle Abreo Franklin. You sign veteran quarterback Matt Hasselbeck. You get Jets safety LaRon Landry and guarantee him $14 million. You get Lawrence Sidbury from the Falcons and Donald Thomas, an offensive guard from the Patriots. Eric Walden of the Packers, an outside backer. He gets $16 million over 4 years. And Greg Toler, a cornerback from the Cardinals who nobody's heard of, gets $14.25 million. Godster Chereles, a $34 million deal with 10 million to sign to play right tackle from Detroit. Arthur, is that the Indianapolis Colts? I mean, this is a team that was 11-5 with a bunch of nobodies last year. What are they doing now?
And it's interesting, we talked about the Bengals at the top of the show, another team that had so much money to spend and chose to certainly sit on most of it. Ryan Grigson didn't get the memo if you were allowed to hold it back on any of that cap room. So he's going for it. Like I said, we knew he had the cash to spend, and he's certainly addressed needs. I still wonder about some of these big contracts. A guy like Godster Chereles, I think he is clearly an upgrade at right tackle over Winston Justice. He's coming off his best year. But Grigson didn't wait for the tackle market to sort of set itself. You saw Sebastian Vollmer get less money weeks after the fact. You saw Phil Loadholt get half the deal, I think, weeks after the fact. So it seems like he may have jumped the gun there, and he may have spent a little bit more money than he had to for some of these guys. You mentioned Abreo Franklin, Ricky Jean-Francois. You know, I think they needed major reinforcements up front defensively. These guys have a chance to chip in there. So like I said, he definitely targeted needs, but he definitely was not really shrewd or holding back any financially.
Well, Eric, I wonder now, when we say not really shrewd, this guy, Ryan Grigson, that is the NFL Executive of the Year in 2012. He was a rookie GM. He clearly has a pretty good eye for talent. When you look at what he did last year with undrafted rookie free agents and some people he picked up, and the Colts had all this room under the cap, I almost wonder if what Ryan isn't saying here is, I don't know how much of it was, but we got a boost from some unexpected things. You know, there was some emotion. There were some factors outside of our control. It obviously made some contribution. I got to be smart enough to get better in key spots if we're going to repeat it again.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And the job he did last season was outstanding. You won't find too many bigger Ryan Grigson fans than myself, just the way he came up. I mean, he was a grinder, a blue-collar guy, you know, former walk-on at Purdue, and he played, you know, did the years of scouting on the road as a college scouting director in Philadelphia. He understands that you have to build up the bottom of your roster. But when I hear Franklin, Jean-Francois, you know, Greg Toler, actually Toler I like, I'll take that one back, but Donald Thomas, Godster Chereles, I mean, I hear backup, and a lot of millions of dollars for these guys. So I don't know. I just Eric Walden was a shocker that he got $4 million per year because he's not that good a player. So maybe I'll be proven wrong. These guys are obviously paid a lot more and know a lot more than I do. But to me, I'm surprised that he hasn't built through the draft.
Yeah, I've actually talked to some people in Green Bay who will tell you that for about 10 minutes a game, Eric Walden will be a $6 million a year player. Problem is the other 50 minutes, he's a minimum salary guy.
Yeah, so that's where watch that Niners playoff game.
You really got to worry about making sure that you're in his head and nobody else is. So that one is a risky signing for the Colts. Jacksonville Jaguars. I know that Shad Khan needs to sell tickets. I know he needs to rebuild the hope of the faithful. But Kevin, I look at Gus Bradley as the new head coach. I look at his choice of offensive and defensive coordinator. I look at the work to do on that roster. And this one looks to me like a long uphill sludge.
Yeah, it's going to be a long-term plan. I'll say this about Gus Bradley, and Eric might have noticed this as well from the combine. No coach was more impressive up there in terms of talking about his team, talking about his vision as Bradley. And people who have talked to Bradley and David Caldwell down at the owners' meeting said the same exact thing. And it's just talk. I understand that. But in this time, it's everyone's, you know, being so tight-lipped, and he's a brand-new head coach. But at least if you're a Jacksonville fan, you could be happy that even though they didn't get a big name, the guy seems to at least act like he knows what he's doing.
Well,
so it's going to take a while, but and they have to figure out the quarterback situation, but they seem to have their heads on straight, the Caldwell and Bradley.
Yeah, and Arthur, the Jags are on your beat, and I'll ask you, I mean, I like Bradley. I got no problem with that. But Fenchanoff, as the offensive coordinator, and Bob Babich is one of the nicest guys yep. I know in the NFL, and I'm thrilled for him that he got another defensive coordinator job. But I'm trying to figure out off the last experience how he was a top candidate.
It's a good question. I'm still trying to figure it out, you know, 6 weeks later as well. Everything we've heard is that he was in way over his head in Chicago, so we'll just have to see. And you know that Gus Bradley is going to have a lot of control on the defensive side of the ball, so actually the one I worry about perhaps a little bit more is Jed Fish on offense. He doesn't have a whole lot of experience. We mentioned they got to get the quarterback situation straight, so... You know, clearly this is another one of those rosters, a lot like the Oakland Raiders. It's going to be a bottom of the barrel, really needing a major overhaul. I guess I was at least a little pleased to see them show a little bit more restraint. We saw where Gene Smith was an unmitigated disaster, and that was in pro free agency. So I at least like to see Dave Caldwell admit that he's going to go through the draft. He knows he needs help pretty much everywhere there. But other than Roy Miller, who I actually thought was a pretty under the radar signing that's going to be able to help them, not a lot of guys that, you know, they really threw a lot of money at or that they're going to have to worry about long term here.
I think I said Babich, of course, is Bob Babich. And let me be clear. Again, more full disclosure. I love the guy. I got to know him in Chicago. He's a wonderful guy. He's a great linebacker coach. I just wonder building this defense from the ground up. We'll keep a close eye on it. We wish him nothing but the best. We've got another commercial break here. Talk a little bit about some of the pro days around the country this year as we build toward, this week, I should say, as we build towards the draft just 4 weeks down the road. Welcome back, everybody. We mentioned some key workouts around the country this week, specifically Manti Te'o at Notre Dame, Matt Barkley at USC, and Marcus Lattimore at South Carolina. Eric, you and I talked about this a little bit as we were getting ready to sit down to the show. Manti Te'o's 40 time. Let's call it 4.7. We've heard him just under 4.7. We've heard it just over 4.7. You were there in South Bend. That is right where you want a top Mike backer in a 4.3 to be. It's fine if you're going to play inside backer in a 3.4. I personally think these times are overrated altogether. Is there some concern about how he got the time down?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Obviously, there was a NFL Network host who may have suggested there was some HGH usage. We're not going to go there. I don't think there's any smoke to that fire at all. So I really think that Te'o just worked hard, was focused on this 40-yard dash, looked pretty quick. I thought he looked okay, hips a little tight in the positional drills, but... You know, he did enough to kind of solidify things.
The biggest problem for Manti Te'o isn't proving he can run faster against a stopwatch, it's proving he can shed blocks.
Right, shed blocks, and that was the huge problem in the Alabama game, and Chance Wormack put his, you know, tattooed his helmet to his chest a few times, so that's going to be a problem. I thought Tyler Eifert looked great, and a little sleeper down the way, a little Sierra Wood, the running back, caught the ball exceptionally well, ran better, so there's some interesting prospects there. I think 8 get drafted out of Notre Dame.
Kevin, Matt Barkley was everything he figured to be prior to the shoulder injury, and I think that's really all he wanted to accomplish, according to Pro Football Weekly. And by the way, folks, let me digress here for a moment. I should mention the Pro Football Weekly 2013 draft preview book is available. It's arrived from the printer. Give us a call at 1-800-FOOTBALL between 9 and 5 Monday through Thursday, 9 and 5 Chicago time. We've got your copy ready for you, the definitive work on the NFL college draft, the best scouting reports you're going to find anywhere on the top 350 prospects. So again, 1-800-FOOTBALL for your draft preview book. Matt Barkley, I believe, is the number one quarterback prospect in this draft, if healthy. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback, but I understand that he showed enough at his workout to at least be considered in that vein.
Yeah, he needed to really, it seemed like, to show that he had the arm strength, you know, to come back from the shoulder injury. I think some scouts seemed to be a little concerned with the way he played senior year. Can he throw that deep ball? But, you know, I like his mechanics. He seemed to be comfortable in the pocket in his junior year. Senior year, they had a lot of offensive line problems, and it made him look really bad. So the question is, if he's on a team with a substandard offensive line, how is he going to handle that? So, you know, Barkley is one of those, I mean, all the quarterbacks in this draft, you see grades all over the place, but I agree with you. I agree with our scout, Nolan Araki. You know, if I had to pick the top quarterback, it'd be Barkley. And from everything it seemed like from his pro day, it didn't prove anything other.
Arthur, Marcus Lattimore of South Carolina has suffered more adversity than any college player I've ever seen. Two horrific leg injuries. He was a first round, maybe even a top 15 pick before the two injuries. Now he's just trying to get healthy enough to play. Worked out at the South Carolina Pro Day. He's not ready to play right now, but actually had scouts standing and cheering for the effort from this kid. He's going to be a priority free agent. Maybe somebody goes in the sixth or seventh round because they're afraid he won't last a free agency. But the response he got from the scouting community at his Pro Day was enough to warm anybody's heart.
Yeah, I think so. This is a kid that's so easy to root for. You hit on all the adversity, and I actually do think it may turn out to be the latter. I think there's going to be a couple teams who are willing to take a shot on this kid, if for nothing else, because they see how much heart he has, what he's been able to overcome already, and like you said, he's not ready yet, but I think he definitely impressed, obviously impressed some scouts, and he's a pretty explosive player when he's right. I think someone's going to take a shot just on a tough kid who's going to do anything it takes to get on the field.
All right, guys, I'm going to make another prediction. I'm going to give you each 15, 20 seconds, no more, to respond. I believe there will not be a quarterback drafted in the first round. If there is, it will be somewhere between 22 and 32, and I don't believe it'll be Geno Smith. Eric?
I'm going to shock you guys. I think three get drafted in the first round. How about that? And I think it's because of desperation. These teams who, you know, decide they're not going to wait till the end of round one or, you know, beginning of round two. So I think three go at some point in round one.
Kevin?
I agree with Eric. I see Nassib. I see Geno Smith. I see Matt Barkley going. If a team's got Trey back late in the first round, like you mentioned, I don't see some of these teams like the Bills, Cardinals, Jaguars, Raiders getting out of the first round without a quarterback.
Arthur?
Strictly desperation. I'm not sure any of these kids deserve to go that high, but we've seen just in the past few years what teams are willing to do to move up just to make sure they have a guy they at least think has a chance to be the guy of the future. I think I could see three going as well.
All right, so I think we have two distinct predictions here. I'm predicting none in the first round.
Right.
You three guys are predicting that at least three teams will blow their first round draft picks in this draft. We'll see, you guys. Just having fun.
You said it, not me.
There may be some great quarterbacks out of this draft, but as draftable prospects, it is an off year. A lot more on the draft starting next week. Right now, all we got left is the publisher's pen. Back in a moment.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
You know, it's really interesting to me, Eric. We talked a little bit off the top about, you know, some risks maybe that Phil Emery has taken in Chicago on character. And we look at the NFL college draft, the upcoming draft, and everybody talking about Manti Te'o's, you know, regrettable off-the-field situation. Will he be downgraded for it? And every scout I've talked to, every GM says they don't care about that. They want to know if he can run well enough and play football well enough. But you do have a situation with six new GMs in the National Football League this year, and I've talked to the six whose jobs they took, and at least three of them specified to me the biggest mistake they made was undervaluing the importance of character and veteran leadership in the locker room, that sometimes you can't just go for the best football player. You can't go for the best 40-yard dash time or the pure athlete. You can't get younger if you're giving up too much in terms of leadership, character, and a veteran presence that knows how to win. Buyer beware as we face the upcoming NFL college draft. That'll do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks, as always, to Randy Meyer. Great job producing and engineering. Our home studio is Syndication Networks, lead syndicator as well. Most of all, though, our thanks to all of you for listening. We do appreciate it. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.